Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
New York Times columnist and WNYC contributor Joan O'Sara is here now to explain the LIBOR scandal and why Britain is in an utter frenzy over it, as he writes, while the U.S. is not, at least not yet. Hi, Joe. Welcome back.
Hey, Brian. How are you? Whoever thought we'd be talking about LIBOR?
LIBOR, London Interbank Offered Rate.
That is it.
I'm yawning already. So how does this affect me more than, say, Tom Cruise and Katie Holmes' divorce?
Well, during the time when it was going on, it probably did affect you in a small way because so many loans are pegged to LIBOR, consumer loans, mortgage loans. But really, it's about traders trying to stick it to other traders. It began because swaps traders were trying to manipulate LIBOR because derivative trades were based around it. And, you know, if they could get it to be a little higher or a little lower, they could be on the winning side of the trade. And that's really where it started.
Robert Diamond, the CEO of Barclays Bank, who had to resign over this, said seeing the traders' emails about this made him physically ill. What was in the worst of those emails?
Oh, you know, thanks, buddy, for taking care of me. Or, you know, hey, can you hold the LIBOR up for 3 more days for me? It was that kind of thing. It was very jokey. And it was also brazen. It was just, you know, they're manipulating probably the key interest rate in the world now because it's really taken over. You know, used to peg everything to the prime rate. They don't really do that anymore. It's just shocking.
The key interest rate in the world. And one number that I've read is $350 trillion of financial products based on the LIBOR, including credit card, mortgage, and student loan rates. How does this one rate set by a bunch of bankers and regulators, mostly in London, affect all our credit card, mortgage, and student loan rates so much?
Well, it's not really set in London. That's point number one. Even though it's called the London Interbank Offered Rate, it's set by 18 big banks around Europe, in Europe and in the United States. So that's not quite right.
Mm-hmm.
But basically what's happened is over time, LIBOR has just become viewed as a good barometer to peg other rates to. And it's kind of gradually overtaken other rates as the thing that you peg things to. I'm not quite sure why that happened or how that happened, but in an evolutionary way, it did happen. And that's why LIBOR took on all this importance. Now, it's important to point out that of the $350 trillion or so, you know, 90% of that is derivatives, and about 10% of that is, you know, consumer loans, maybe $10 trillion or so, which is still, you know, as they say, real money.
Which is to say that it's mostly trader-on-trader risk and manipulation and chicanery here?
Yes. Of which we have seen way too much in the past 3 or 4 years.
Still, anytime we're talking about $350 trillion riding on one group of banks making a set of decisions among themselves, I mean, what's the whole U.S. national debt, like $14 trillion, something like that?
Yeah.
$350 trillion. So the Times headline today on this, on page one, says, "Bank scandal turns spotlight to regulators."
Right.
So tell me about the regulators. Were they clueless or weak or corrupt?
Well, it's slightly more complicated, I'm sorry to say. What happened is after the traders were manipulating LIBOR for a few years, we got to the financial crisis. And LIBOR was a key indicator of the health of a particular bank. In other words, because what it really is how much banks are willing, what interest rates banks are willing to lend to each other. And so if the higher that rate is, the weaker the bank was seen. And so what basically happened was, you know, Barclays was putting in a higher interest rate, and a top British bank regulator said to them, gee, why are your rates always so high? Now, he claims that he did not mean that to mean that they should lower the rate, but they took it to mean, wink, wink, nod, nod, they were going to lower the rate to make it more like everybody else's. And that's what they did. And they also, Barclays firmly believes that everybody else was lying about the LIBOR too to make themselves look healthier.
And that's
so basically, it was a conspiracy to make the banks look healthier than they were. Whether the regulators were in it or not is a little unclear. They say no. Barclays seems to imply the answer is yes.
Listeners, do you care about the LIBOR scandal? Are you outraged, as a lot of people in the UK are? Or are you just beginning to start to understand this around the edges through conversations like this and don't quite yet know what to think or how relevant it is to you or to big things in our world? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692 for Joe Nocera, or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. And let me get to that that aspect. Why is London? Well, your column the other day was about two big things to know about the LIBOR scandal, and the second one was that London is in an utter frenzy about this, and the United States is not. Why the difference?
Well, I think first of all, Barclays is a British bank, and they were the first ones to, in essence, plead guilty, and they're paying a very large fine, somewhere around $450 million. So I think that's point one. It's a little bit like the Goldman Sachs scandal was here. The Goldman Sachs scandal really didn't affect you and me. It was about Goldman's behavior with their counterparties and their clients and how they treated them. But people were outraged because it just seemed like such bald and corrupt behavior. And they were repulsed by the behavior. I think the same thing has happened in London over this scandal. It's not that LIBOR necessarily affects their daily life. But it is that it sends this unmistakable signal that banks play by their own rules. They don't play by the rules of everybody else. They're given all these special advantages because they're banks. They're too big to fail and so on and so forth. And then they're pulling shenanigans like this. And it had this kind of wake-up call aspect to it. And even the regulators in Britain are much more condemning of the banks right now than any regulator I've ever heard on this side of the ocean.
Matthew in Fairfield, you're on WNYC. Hi, Matthew.
Hi. Well, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Big fan of the show. So just as a college student, I obviously have a bunch of college loans, and I'm about to head into med school, which implies even more. So with this whole LIBOR thing, obviously, the volatility of the market is going up, and interest rates are going to rise, and my student loan, my own, the amount of money that I have to pay is going up, and thus it's affecting me as a citizen of the United States. That's all I got to say.
Thank you very much. You draw that connection, Joe?
Not particularly with student loans, just because, you know, the federal government is setting the rate on that, and I think it's like 3.5% right now.
At least the Stafford loans.
Right.
Other kinds, I guess. But
Ellen
in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ellen.
Yes, hi. I'm sort of at the other end of the spectrum. I'm a senior citizen, and I have a reverse mortgage on my co-op, and it's kind of the way that I can afford to stay living where I live. And it is based on the LIBOR interest rates. That's the first time I had ever heard of LIBOR, and I'd like to know what your guest thinks that I should do. What steps should I take? Should I be calling the bank that deals with the loan and finding out if I should pull out, or what should I do? How much trouble am I in?
I don't think you should do anything based around LIBOR.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this scandal took place between 2005 and 2009.
Oh.
It certainly, it's still, rates are still, you know, quite low right now. And it's hard to imagine that, I mean, if you pulled out, what would you do?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, you're in your home, you've found a way to afford it. You should just stick with it, I think.
Okay, I just wanted, you know, actually, just the question I would love to ask is if there is some chance that that my life savings could be wiped out this way.
From a distance, I have no way of knowing one way or the other, but I tend to doubt it.
Ellen, thank you, and good luck. You should talk to a financial advisor, it sounds like. But there are, you know, look, the first two calls show the level of suspicion, the level of lack of trust, the level of fear
right.
that's being engendered from student loans to senior citizen reverse mortgages
right.
because we can't trust the banks
and,
or the regulators.
You know, that's right. And this scandal is going to eventually hit us because, you know, banks in the United States are being investigated on this. Barclays cooperated and quickly settled, and the regulators gave them some credit for that. But the chances of this stopping at Barclays is pretty nil.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to give a shout out to one regulator, however, the CFTC really doggedly pursued this, and I think of them as a little agency that could. You know, they only have 700 employees. They have all this new work to do regulating derivatives. And yet they're the ones who really broke this thing open.
Mike in Stillwater, a former investment banker, Mike?
Yes, absolutely, and a trader. I was a derivative trader for a major house for several years.
Uh-huh.
What this fundamentally does is undermine the idea of what free markets actually are. Of all the free markets we have, whether it's equities, debt, or currency, the idea that the LIBOR itself was the benchmark of what free markets were supposed to be built upon, the underlying trust between the banks that set that globally and how that was supply and demand driven has now been completely blown out of the water, because now we know that if LIBOR can be manipulated to this degree, then what does that mean about the debt market? What does that mean about the equity market? What does that mean about the home mortgage market and so on and so on, et cetera, et cetera? It fundamentally changes a lot of the way the perception is about how free markets actually work. It makes the system rigged in the average person's mind, let alone for those that trusted the idea that at least we had LIBOR and that was we knew that was safe.
Mm-hmm. That he's put his finger on it, hasn't he?
I think so. I think that's exactly right. You know, one of the things about LIBOR was it really wasn't based necessarily on real transactions. So, you know, the submitters would just submit a number, and there was no way of tracking whether it was right or not. And they just assumed that it was correct. And, you know, at least with a stock, it's based around a trade. With a bond, it's based around a trade. And so it's really astonishing that they would be so cavalier about rigging this interest rate.
Well, there you have a little more about the LIBOR scandal, folks, and we will see if the frenzy that has hit the UK over this is coming soon to a banking capital near you or not. But, Joe, a little sports sidelight. Just when the Mets were about to move into Citi Field, the Citibank scandal or their piece of the whole financial crisis broke, and the Mets had to endure a little shame along with the celebration. Now the Nets are about to move into what? The Barclays Center.
That's right.
In Brooklyn.
That's right.
And here we go again. So maybe sports teams that want a positive image should stop selling naming rights to banks.
Yes, it's the curse of the naming rights.
But then again, the Nets are moving out of the Prudential Center, and how long will it be before the next insurance industry scandal? So maybe it's hard to find a clean industry with enough money to want to name sports stadiums after itself. Who knows? Anyway, Joe Nocera, WNYC contributor, New York Times columnist, thanks again for explaining the LIBOR.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Always a pleasure.
And listeners, if you want to keep this conversation going, go to our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Coming up next, Mitt Romney and those offshore accounts.